crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
5 years ago, Watch Jerusalem editor-in-chief Gerald Flory wrote an illuminating piece entitled How the Syrian Crisis Will End. 5 years later, with the evacuation underway of the rebels from Aleppo, the last major Syrian city under their rule, some commentators are calling this the beginning of the end of the Syrian civil war. But are we really at the end of this Syrian conflict? On today's program, we'll look back at that article by Gerald Flory as it presages some dramatic shifts still to take place in the Syrian battlefront. In doing so, we'll reveal a major player in Syria's future that is still yet to join the Syrian fray in a substantial way. If you want to understand this coming shift in the Middle Eastern alliances related directly to the Syrian civil war, stay tuned to this episode of Watch Jerusalem. Welcome once again to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nuchtigal, coming to you from Jerusalem, Israel, just 523 kilometers from the Syrian city of Aleppo to my north. And what's been happening there, you've all seen it upon watching the news of late, is one of the most extreme humanitarian disasters over the past 50 years, as we see that city finally, it seems, coming to an end of its part in the Syrian civil war. Well, before the war began, Aleppo was a thriving metropolis and tourist destination. It was known for its medieval architecture, its rich cultural heritage. It was one of Syria's biggest cities and one of the oldest continually inhabited cities in the entire world. It's a United Nations World Heritage Site that was named the Islamic Capital of Culture just back in 2006. Before the war, it had 2.3 million inhabitants. Now, right now, the current estimates at the high end, there's only 250,000 people there. And no doubt you've seen many of the before and after shots of Aleppo, a place before where there was flourishing trade and many people in the streets, and now that city is absolutely desolate. It's been turned into a pile of rubble. Food shortages, power shortages, public services completely shut down in rebel-held areas after the government, the Syrian government, with the aid of Russia and Iran, have bombed virtually every structure that you can see in rebel-held Aleppo. Now, over the past week, there looks to be some type of deal being brokered between Russia and Turkey on behalf of the Syrian government and the rebels, and that deal should see the remaining civilians as well as the rebel fighters be able to leave peacefully, we hope, out of that last remaining area that they're in control of in that city. And this is, well, that'll happen, of course, if the Iranians and Hezbollah, the Iranian proxy, don't sabotage that retreat as they already did a number of times last week. And there is definitely hope for Aleppo and for Syria, but can we really think that there's going to be too much hope in this deal that's being brokered by Russia, Turkey, and the Iranians, especially for those that have exited the country? Many of those immigrants that we've been seeing flood into Europe over the past year and a half and flood into Turkey, Lebanon, Jordan. Will there be hope for them to return back to a peaceful Syria? Now, some say that it's just best to stop the Syrian war right now, and many reason that the fighting would stop if the rebels just laid down their arms. Then there would be peace. Well, if the rebels just laid down their arms, you can be sure that there'd be no future for those men in Syria. The Syrian regime has a pretty good memory. They won't be prone to forgiveness, but likely one by one, those rebel fighters and their families would be targeted during the peace. So we have to ask ourselves, how will this Syrian civil war end? How will it end? That's a really good question, and it's one that that article from 4 years ago answers. And its forecast from 4 or 5 years ago is as valid right now as when it was made. I want to quote from this article again. It's entitled from 2011 or 2012, How the Syrian Crisis Will End. And this is how it begins. Syria is at war. That country has been experiencing a slowly unfolding civil war for 17 months and counting. More than 10,000 people have already been killed. That's just sad. This is 4 or 5 years ago. Just 10,000 people. 10,000 is 10,000 too many. But there was only 10,000 that had been killed. Now that figure, depending on who you talk to or try and research that figure, it could be anywhere up to 500,000. 500,000 people. Now, the most conservative estimates are around 250,000 to 300,000 people, but it's likely more than that. The UN stopped counting. I mean, there's no real way of, because a lot of international agencies have been banned from certain parts of Syria, it's hard to know exactly how many have been killed. Anyway, this article continues. The Syrian people are intensifying their protests. Well, they were. Against President Bashar Assad's government, and the government is fighting back with brutal force. Thousands are dying and tens of thousands are fleeing the country. Try millions now. Millions have fled the country. Millions and millions. 2 million right now are still in Turkey. Over 1 million in Lebanon. Almost 600,000 to 700,000 in Jordan to the south. And then if you look at those that have made it into Europe, there's about 1 million there as well. A lot of people have left that country. Then Gerald Flory continues, other countries have been pressuring Assad to step down for over a year, and it looks like his regime is reaching the breaking point, and it has. It has looked like that for the past 4 or 5 years, that he's reaching the breaking point, yet it now seems that he will be able to stay in power at least for a little bit longer. This article continues, but there is something much more significant happening in Syria than just another civil war. Many nations want to see Assad gone, but nobody wants the kind of government that would emerge, or nobody knows what kind of government would emerge to replace him. The Arab Spring has destabilized much of the Middle East and resulted in a range of outcomes and a dangerous level of volatility. Most of the countries involved have lurched towards radicalism. Then he continues, world leaders and news commentators cannot tell you in advance where this crisis will lead, but you can know Syria's future if you read what we have been writing based on the Bible for the past 70 years. What we are seeing right now in Syria is a major biblical prophecy in the process of being fulfilled. What happens in Syria will likely lead to mighty nations changing course and the foundations of this world being shaken. Now, that sounds like an outlandish comment to make, that the end of the Syrian civil war is prophesied in your Bible, but bear with me. Bear with me during this program, and you'll see how that makes sense. Gerald Flory continues, did you know that the book of Psalms prophesies the future of Syria? Did you know that? This prophecy reveals the outcome of the uprising in Syria. It also exposes the key involvement of a major outside nation, something we can already see developing. Right now, Gerald Flory continues, Syria is Iran's most important regional ally, but that is about to change. And right now, we would say that Iran's most important regional ally is still Syria, but that is still about to change. And I think that's a pretty bold statement to make, even now, 4 or 5 years after the start of the Syrian civil war. But it's one that we hold to still, that by the end of this civil war, Syria is going to be no longer answering to the beck and call of Iran. But they will be allied with a power that, at least for right now, they aren't a dominant player in the civil war. And that might seem like it's a far-off forecast or prediction. And just looking at it, I mean, if we were a geostrategist looking at the situation in Syria, we would probably have a couple of options as to what Syria's future would be like, or who's going to dominate Syria in the future. You could say that Iran stays the dominant power in Syria, as they have done or have been for the past decade, and with that, Assad or could continue to largely follow Tehran's directives. Of course, it is critical for Iran to maintain power in Syria. That's why they're there. That's why they've dedicated a lot of their forces to fighting there, so that they can have their land bridge across the Levant to the Mediterranean coast to ensure that they can maintain contact with their number one proxy terrorist organization, supreme fighting force of Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. And to keep Hezbollah supplied, Iran needs to continue its hold on Syria. So that's one option looking forward, that Iran would stay the dominant power in Syria. The other possible option is for Russia to replace Iran as the number one foreign power there. And this is one that has some historical backing, as Syria formed a strong part of the Soviet Union's Arab alliance that attacked Israel numerous times, especially in the 60s and 70s. And Russia to this day maintains a naval port on Syria's coast. They likely want to keep that, and that's probably one of the reasons why they're there. They also have constructed two airfields, I believe, in Syria, and likely they would like to use those in the future as a forward military position in the Middle East. And also, Russia might want to stay there because what we've seen from their involvement so far is it's really weakened the United States' standing in the world, and particularly in the Middle East. You'll remember that it was Russia who negotiated with the United States for Assad to get rid of his chemical weapons after Assad crossed that red line that President Obama gave, saying that if he used that on his own people, there would be a reaction from the United States, a military reaction from the United States. Now, at the time that Assad did, it was confirmed that he used chemical weapons on his own people, the United States, they wanted a nuclear deal with Iran. And Iran wouldn't stand for that deal if the United States backed up its word with Assad. So the Russians swooped in, offered President Obama a way out without any military action, saying that they would take all of Syria's stockpile of chemical weapons out of the country. But by allowing the United States to save face, Russia exposed the lengths to which the United States would not be willing to contribute troops any longer to a Middle Eastern theater. So without the United States really in the picture in the Middle East going forward, you could see that Russia would want to maintain influence in Syria. So maybe that geostrategic thinker would opine that Russia would come out on top on Syria. It's dedicated a lot of energy and support for Assad to stay in power, and I'm sure they would like something in return. Now, with the rebels reeling with their losses, you would expect either Russia or Iran to be the dominant player in Syria's future. You would expect that. But no one, and I mean no one, would likely say that Germany, of all nations, would become the most powerful actor in Syria's future. Yet that's what we've been saying. Now again, before you think this is crazy and stop listening, you really need to consider Germany as becoming that dominant outside power in the Middle East. This is especially in light of Germany's rapid rise inside Europe over the past decade, and especially over the past few years. They are now the undisputed leader of Europe, especially since Brexit and the soon coming loss of the United Kingdom to balance out Germany's dominance in the EU. And if you look at the outside power bloc who has suffered the most from Middle East instability, and especially the Syrian civil war, it hasn't been the Russians. It hasn't been the United States. It's had the most to lose. It hasn't been the Asian blocs. It's been the European bloc, as millions of migrants have fled the Syrian civil war and flooded into Europe. Now, so serious was Europe's inability really to handle the incoming migrants, they had to cut a deal with Turkey to basically keep 2 million or more Syrians within Turkey's own border. Europe realizes they need stability in the Middle East. Germany realizes, as the leader of Europe, that they need stability in the Middle East, and in particular in Syria, to maintain their own fragile union. They also need stability in North Africa to stop the migrants from traveling up through Libya, getting on boats and heading over across the Mediterranean into Italy that way. And they're working to try and provide some stability to Africa to stop that. Right now, Germany is forking out millions upon millions of dollars to try and stabilize African nations, not out of benevolence for African nations, but so that they can try and improve some certain situations and conditions in their African country so they don't want to leave to migrate to Europe. Then they're also contributing financial aid to beef up the militaries of African nations so that they can keep their own people in their countries in Africa so they don't affect Europe. Germany is worried about the continuing migrant crisis. They're worried about instability right now in Africa and across the Middle East because they have the most to lose. Now, speaking of what they've done already inside Africa, I just want to quote from an article. It's entitled, Meet Europe's Favorite Genocidal Warlord. And this was written by Richard Palmer of thetrumpet.com a couple of months ago. And it just shows you the lengths to which Germany is concerned about what's happening in Africa. But we can apply this very much to what's happening in the Middle East as well and how concerned they are at the end result or the instability that's created in the Middle East because it does affect them. Anyhow, I want to read this article. Meet Europe's favorite genocidal warlord. And this is what Richard Palmer says. He says, Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir is about as much of a pariah as it is possible for a head of state to be. The man seems never to have met a terrorist group he did not like. Bashir invited Osama bin Laden to his country in the 1990s, shipped weapons for Hamas, and invited the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps to set up camp in his country. He also is also wanted for war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide, and is the first sitting head of state to be indicted by the International Criminal Court. And he is also the proud recipient of tens of millions of dollars in cash from the European Union. So he is the most unsavory of characters, this strongman ruling Sudan right now. And yet he's the recipient of tens of millions of dollars of cash from the European Union. Why? Why is the European Union willing to give up some of their moral high ground in order to pay out such a man? This article continues, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is not the only unsavory character Europe has turned to in an effort to solve its migrant crisis. Last October, the EU called for more cooperation with Sudan to combat migrant trafficking. Then in April, it announced $110 million US dollars and an aid package for the nation, paid out of the EU's $2 billion Emergency Trust Fund for Africa. The money is to be spent on, among other things, improving security at the borders. And then the article continues there. They're going to send $45 million to train the border police there, provide equipment in Sudan and seven other African countries. Then at the time, this was apparently leaked, the European Commission warned that under no circumstances should the public learn about this plan. Well, the public did learn about their plan to pay off these type of leaders in Africa to ensure that there would be stability there so that they wouldn't be affected. Europe wouldn't be affected. So they're paying money to foreign military so they can maintain their own border crossings to keep their people in their country. But that's not the only thing they're doing. They're increasing their own defense spending in light also of the arrival of Donald Trump. This is what Ursula von der Leyen, she's the German defense minister. She is obviously a key ally of Angela Merkel, the German chancellor. And she said that Europe needs to find a common political will for greater relevance in security policy. Because in light of Mr. Trump coming into power, she then talked about, this is from the Financial Times, an article written in November, that European NATO members need to carry a bigger share of the burden on military spending. This demand remains unchanged after the election of Donald Trump. Then this article continues from the Financial Times. Mr. Trump's election adds urgency to a debate in Germany how the country should take on a larger role in global security given its position as the most powerful state in the EU. But Ms. Merkel and others say Berlin must act in concert with the EU partners to avoid being cast as the bloc's bully. So they need to have the guise of the European Union and act within that so that they can't blow their own cover. Notice what Henning Oet, he's a defense expert in Ms. Merkel's ruling party, said. He said, quote, "We can rely less on the United States engaging in crisis regions in the world and so contributing to security here in Europe. This will mean that more missions for the Europeans, well, this will mean more missions for the Europeans, especially for the key country of Germany. Then Norbert Rotten, the head of the Bundestag's Foreign Affairs Committee, told Financial Times this, quote, "It is inevitable. Europe and Germany will have to bear a much bigger share of the international responsibility, and we will have to get ready for this much faster than in the last few years. This is a wake-up call." And this is the last couple of weeks and months that these stories have been coming out. This wake-up call for Germany's military as the retreat from the world by America takes place, that they need to maintain their own security. They need to maintain security at their southern border. They need to be the ones paying off different nations in Africa, sending troops down even into Africa to maintain security. Germany must have stability at its southern border. They're realizing this. And their southern border is not Austria. It's the southern Mediterranean. It's North Africa. It's Turkey. It's Syria. That's where they need stability, in these countries at the periphery of Europe. Now, up to this point, they haven't been doing much as far as their own military. There are military deployments through Africa and even some training missions, I believe, in northern Iraq as well. But there's no German boots on the ground in the Syrian civil war. And yet what we're seeing is that they've been financing foreign allies to do the fighting and keep back the migrants. They've been acting from arm's length, but from that distance, there's only so much that they can do. And when we come back, we're going to take a closer look at Germany's interests, not in Africa, but in the Middle East, and what they are doing right now to increase their power credentials there.
The prophet Daniel wrote about a future confrontation between a power in the north and the king of the south. We are now in the time when these two major powers are quickly rising. The king of the south is stirring up trouble even today. It is critical that you know the identity of this prophesied power. For more, request our booklet, King of the South. Visit thetrumpet.com and click the literature tab to select your free booklet.
This is Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host once again, Brent Nachtigall. And before the break, we're talking about Germany and Europe's need for stability at its southern borders. Now, naturally, if you're a European and you need to stop the instability at your southern border, you have to ask yourself, who's causing that destabilization? Now, some would say it's the Islamic State, but Germany sees better than that. And while many Syrians did flee from the Islamic State, the huge majority weren't fleeing from them. They were fleeing from Assad, backed and supported solely, at least initially, by Iran. Iran. Now, while the United States, over the past few years, might disagree, the Europeans and the Germans don't have any rose-colored glasses on determining who is the most disturbing actor across the Middle East. Obviously, it's Iran. Whether it's in Syria, Yemen, Iraq, you know that it's Iran that's destabilizing the Middle East and upsetting the status quo. Germany knows this. And that's why what they're doing right now is trying to shore up their Arab alliances at the moment in the Middle East. Now, this was in view in the past 2 weeks. The German defense minister, Ursula von der Leyen, was touring the Middle East, and she first stopped in Saudi Arabia, the number one enemy, an adversary of Iran. And there she talked about some weaponry transactions they were going to make, though they said they were going to be for defensive armaments only. Then they agreed in principle for Saudi officers to actually come to Germany to be trained by their officers over the next few months. In the next few months, that'll be becoming official. While she was there, she said, you might have seen the hoopla surrounding her not wearing a headscarf, And while the politically correct press got up in arms about it and they made it into a story, Saudi Arabian leaders didn't care. This was Germany. They need Germany. And von der Leyen, she didn't care about wearing a headscarf either. She represents Germany. And she knows that they need Germany. So from Saudi Arabia, she went to a security conference in Bahrain. And there she talked about combating terrorism. Another spot, Bahrain, the leadership there is fully aware of Iran's attempts to undermine their rule by trying to motivate Bahrain's Shiite majority population to rebel. So she was there. And then where did she go? She went to Iran. No, she didn't. Sorry. She didn't go to Iran. She went to Jordan. For its part of a deal between the two, Jordan, and as part of the reason that she was there, Jordan was about to receive 16 more tanks, armored vehicles, in the fight against terrorism. And they agreed that they'll get another 34 tanks by the end of next year. And she said there that Jordan, von der Leyen said, Jordan is a bulwark against terrorism. And then she said, if we're not ready to bring security to these countries, they will quickly be overrun with terrorists. What does she mean? These countries. We need to bring security to these countries so they're not overrun with terrorists. Now, she's not saying Islamic State or Daesh, ISIS, whatever you want to call them. She's being more general than that. Because across the Middle East, and specifically in these, at least in Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Bahrain, Iran, is the number one terrorist organization, terror-sponsoring country. And so there she was down in Jordan. She talked even about the possibility of establishing an air base in Jordan, a German air base in Jordan as well. So she's in Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Jordan. Notice where she didn't go. The German defense minister didn't go to Iran. She didn't say to Iran, send over your officers to Germany, we'll train them. She didn't say to Iran, here's some more tanks for you to fight terrorism. Why not? Because she knows that Iran is the cause of regional destabilization, and she is there to strengthen Germany's relationship with Iran's enemies because of that. Now, Germany would like to be able to contain Iran's rise by arms deals, by financial support for those Arab countries surrounding Iran, but it's getting to the point right now where they see that bolstering these other allies is not enough. It's not enough to provide arms and weaponry to these nations, and they may have to get their hands dirty, and this is really where Syria comes in, especially if Germany and Europe sees that the likely outcome right now is that Syria is going to be more firmly in Iran's camp. Now, over the past couple of weeks, we've seen Europe get a little bit more vocal against what both Russia and Iran have been doing in Syria. But it is going to get, their contribution to this fight is going to increase more than just words. Now, I'd like to quote again from this article how the Syrian crisis will end. Again, written in 2011, and yet completely valid for the time we're living in right now. This is what Gerald Flurry writes. Germany has a global strategy, and what is occurring in Syria fits into that strategy perfectly. Here is the critical thing to realize. And for those people that think that Germany would never get involved in the Middle East, think again. Think again. Here is the critical thing to realize. One of Germany's primary objectives in this region is to develop an axis with Middle Eastern states that oppose Iran. That's what's happening. Germany has been stepping up its political involvement and its financial support in Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states, Turkey, Lebanon, and Jordan. It's formed solid trade relationships with virtually all these countries, covering many industries from telecommunications to the military. For Germany, the article writes, Syria's revolution isn't about a humanitarian crisis at all. It's about geopolitics and how Berlin can aggressively advance its own strategic interest in the Middle East. And that's what we're about to see. Germany, coming out of World War II, has been real careful not to overstep its bounds militarily. And there are many Germans in Germany that don't want the country to go that direction and are still very reticent to be seen as an aggressor in war, in armed conflict. But it's getting to the point now that with the migrant crisis that is not going away, and with Iran on the march, that somebody is going to have to stand up and do something, and Germany as the leader of Europe, Bible prophecy shows, will be that someone. Bible prophecy reveals that very soon there will be a shift, a dramatic shift in Syria. Syria will no longer align with Iran. It shows, Bible prophecy does, that Germany helps cause this split, and in fact, it will be Germany that Syria is aligned with. Now, this prophecy takes place in the book of Psalms, or it's recorded in the book of Psalms, Psalms chapter 83. It discusses a multi-nation Middle Eastern confederation that allies with Germany. Now, it's important to understand that this isn't just an old book that was written 2,500 years ago and doesn't apply to today. This alliance that is described in Psalm 83 has never, ever happened in history. It didn't happen in ancient history. It didn't happen when the Bible was written. All the Bible commentaries, they'll tell you that. But it's happening now. It's happening right now. It's underway. Now, immediately before the Psalm 83 alliance is fully takes place, or they fully come together, there is another prophecy that takes place, and that is found in Daniel chapter 11, verse 40, or another event that takes place that's prophesied in Daniel 11 and verse 40. And we've talked about this prophecy on this show. That verse says this: "And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him." Now, the king of the south we have labeled as radical Islam led by Iran. Iran, the king of the south that is marching over the Middle East right now. And what's going to happen? The king of the north, that is a German-led Europe, is going to come against him like a whirlwind, and with chariots, with horsemen, with many ships as well. "And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over." Now, that's an important prophecy because it shows where Iran's march is heading, that somebody is going to put a stop to it, and that somebody is going to be this biblical king of the north. And the Bible does describe that Germany, as the leader of that king of the north, is going to utterly wipe out Iran. Now, there is a specific alliance that Germany has with Arab states that is developing right now that is both to counter that alliance, or counter Iran's march, but then once Iran is destroyed, it is going to be used for even greater destruction in the Middle East. But what we want to talk about right now is how this relates to Syria and this biblical prophecy that includes Syria and also includes Germany and also includes a number of other Middle Eastern nations. Now, this prophecy, you can read it for yourself. It's found in Psalm chapter 83, Psalm chapter 83. In this article of how the Syrian crisis will end, it'll show you this prophecy. It's also on our prophecy page. If you go to watchjerusalem.co.il and you click on the prophecy tab and you look there in the right, you'll find this Psalm 83 alliance and what it means and who's going to be involved. This is what verse 1 says, or verse 1 to 3. It says, "Keep not your silence, O God, hold not your peace, and be not still, O God. For lo, your enemies make a tumult, and they that hate you have lifted up the head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted against your little ones." So notice that this alliance takes crafty counsel against God's people. And that obviously through history has been Israel. And the Israel of the Bible obviously refers to more than just the Jewish state Israel today. The Jewish state Israel is made up of mostly of the tribes of Judah, Benjamin, Levi. But there's obviously 10 other tribes out there that are also sons of Israel. And what we have here is this group, these people, these enemies, taking crafty counsel against Israel and Judah. But what is their purpose? Verse 4 says that, or reveals this. "They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. Let's cut them off. Let's wipe them out. Let's completely get rid of the name Israel forever. That is the aim of this alliance, the eventual aim of this alliance. Okay, so who are these people? It continues this prophecy, for they have consulted together with one consent, and they are a confederate against you. And then it lists these people, these nations that comprise this alliance. Notice it, the Tabernacles of Edom, the Ishmaelites of Moab, the Hagarenes, Gebal and Ammon, and Amalek, and the Philistines with the inhabitants of Tyre. Asher is also joined with them. They have helped the children of Lot, Selah. Now, we need to know who these people are. Who are the modern descendants of these people? Because this is an end-time prophecy that has never happened before, and it says that Israel is going to be attacked by them. They are going to be in an alliance. And that attack on Israel, and we can even look into Daniel 11 to see this, and you can request our booklet, The King of the South, to see this in greater detail, that attack against Israel comes after this attack between the King of the North, or a German-led Europe, and the King of the South. But let's go through some of these nations and who they are. Edom, that's Turkey. Ishmaelites, there is Saudi Arabia. Moab and Ammon, they both refer to Jordan. Gebal is Lebanon. The Hagarenes mentioned there, they anciently dwelt in the land known as Syria today. So we're going to have an alliance that's going to have Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and even parts of Lebanon with Syria. Now, if you look at it today, who is already aligned with one another? Notably, it's the Sunni states of Turkey, Saudi Arabia. Sure, some of these are loose alliances, but they're definitely not aligned with Shiite Iran. Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Jordan. Now, there are two countries there that, in a large part, are aligned with Iran to this day. Who are they? The Hagarenes. Syria is aligned with Iran. And also, southern Lebanon is most definitely aligned with Iran. So there is going to be a dramatic change in Syrian politics, in the power brokers in Syria, in Syria's alliances, as well as Lebanon, if this prophecy is to be fulfilled. But notice the one outside player. It's real strange to have such an outside player here involved. And that is Asher. Who is Asher? Now, we've got a book, Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, and it's available for request for you. It's free. And in that, we prove that Asher is Germany. Germany. So we have all these Middle Eastern nations aligning with Germany. Now, right now, Bashar al-Assad's Syria is closely aligned with Iran, as we've talked about. But this prophecy shows that that alliance is going to split. Now, you won't hear that anywhere else. Well, you might hear that it will split, possibly, and Russia will take over. But nobody is saying that it's, in fact, Germany that's going to benefit most from Syria's future, that they will be aligned with Germany. And then once that happened, that'll have a domino effect on other nations as well. Once Lebanon's cut off, if Syria falls to Germany's dominance, then it would be easy to see how Hezbollah will not be able to function as it has done under Iran's power and protection. So this is just a dramatic change that we're expecting to see outcome out of the Syrian civil war. It's one that not many commentators can see today. Yet you look at the stressful circumstances Germany's in right now and Europe's in, and Germany is going to have to take the lead. And Germany knows that Iran is the one that's destabilizing the Middle East, and even the one that is responsible at its cause, at its root, for the migrant crisis of these Syrians that are fleeing from Syria. If at the very instance of the start of the Syrian civil war, if Iran didn't provide Assad with the extra forces, with the manpower, didn't send Hezbollah in from next door, from Lebanon, it would have been likely that Assad would have fallen, especially considering the Sunni-dominated country that he ruled over for so long, and the deep hatred a lot of his population had for the way that he ruled them. And yet it was Iran that stepped in and bolstered and supported him for years and years, and now going on 5 years, to the point that millions and millions of Syrians had to flee. And where did they flee? A lot of them fled to the neighboring nations, and then they came looking into Europe, to where Germany has 1 million migrants over plus flooding into their country, destabilizing their own country. And the roots of that really did belong to Iran, or the culprit behind that was Iran. And Germany is taking note. Germany cannot afford this to happen in the future. And they're taking note. They're shoring up their alliances with Middle Eastern states. They're shoring up their alliances in Africa as well, as Iran even tries to make inroads over there. And yet nobody is aware of what Germany's doing. Nobody's aware of how Germany's going to act in the future. But your Bible does tell us. Your Bible does tell us that there is going to be a massive shift in alliances in the Middle East, especially in Lebanon and especially in Syria. And as this Syrian civil war looks to be coming to a conclusion, we need to be aware and watch Germany, of all nations, Germany, for them to get more and more involved in peace deals going forward, in standing up to what Iran is doing there, and even working out possibly some deal with Russia to ensure that, at least in the future, Syria does not answer to Iran. Syria won't answer to Iran once this Syrian civil war is over. Now, should we believe the Bible? We should, if we want to understand end time biblical prophecy. And the book of Psalms is the only book that contains this prophecy. Without Psalms 83, there'd be no way to understand these particular events until after they'd happened. But we're telling you what happens before. We're telling you before Syria cuts off its ties with Iran, we're telling you that it is Germany that's going to benefit most from that. And in fact, it'll be Germany that does a lot to cause that split with Iran. Now, where does this Psalm 83 union lead? Well, it leads past the Syrian civil war. It leads into the time described by the prophet Jeremiah as Jacob's trouble. It enters into the same time described in the book of Daniel as the time of trouble. But at the end of that time of trouble, as Jeremiah describes, Israel will be redeemed. They do have their crafty counsel against Israel, and they do come to fight against Israel. But at the end, Israel will be redeemed, and David, King David, will once again be resurrected to rule over all Israel. That's what your Bible says, and that's where today's events in Syria are ultimately leading. So really, we need to watch Syria. Make sure you watch Bible prophecy as well. This will happen. Now, for you that don't believe it will happen, well, all I ask is that you remember. Remember what you've heard today, so that when it does happen, then you can believe. Now, we're going to try and make it easier for you by publishing articles in Watch Jerusalem that will help you in this, that will record the significant strides Germany makes into the Middle East en route to countering Iran and their power block in the Middle East. So make sure you check in to the articles we put up. We'll soon be coming out with a weekly newsletter so that you'll be able to make sure you don't miss anything of import on the website. Of course, if you want to receive notifications as well of new prophetic news on Watch Jerusalem, you can also follow our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at @watch_Jerusalem. There we post all of our new articles. And then if you'd like to send some feedback to the show as well, you can do that by sending an email to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. We've already got some feedback, and next week I'm going to start going through some of that and actually answering some archaeological questions that you might have. You can write to us as well if you like at P.O. Box 8314 Jerusalem, Israel, 910-8201. That's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening to Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.